Hello and welcome back to today's episode of the Baseball Plug. I'm your host, Micah Fleischman. Join alongside me, my co-host and good friend, Nicholas Bear. Nick, how's it going?
I'm doing well. It's been a minute, but you know what? We're back in baseball season, so we figured we'd pick this up again.
The show is back.
Missed the whole off season, but that's okay. Nobody cares. We'll just pretend it didn't happen. There's no off season. We didn't miss anything, guys.
Nothing happened at all during the off season. Soto is still a Padre. Ohtani is still an Angel, and Ipe is still a good guy.
Yeah. Okay. So, how are you doing?
I'm good. Just woke up from a pretty long nap. Last nap of 16. So in
that's right,
4 hours and 38 minutes. We'll turn another year and become 1 year closer to being a legal adult. So looking forward to that. We'll see how that goes. We've got a lot to cover today. As Nick said, we have been MIA, partially my fault, primarily my fault.
Both of our fault. It's nobody particularly.
Yeah. But we are back doing this frequently, weekly. Season started, a lot to cover. Let's just hop right into it. We're going to start with buying and selling a couple of teams that are hot right now, the first of which are the Milwaukee Brewers. Nick, you've watched, I would imagine, more Brewers games than I have for the simple fact that they're an NL team and you watch more NL games than I do. So what have you seen from them so far this year?
Yeah, I mean, I actually, because I have MLB TV, I just watch a lot of games in general. I watch a ton of teams. But the Brewers, which I'm not really surprised about, their offense has been better this year. And I kind of figured that would be their formula to winning this year because they traded Corbin Burns this offseason. They brought back Brandon Woodruff, but he's out for the whole year with, I think it was a shoulder surgery. And they lost Devin Williams for the first half of the year, who's, I don't know, top closer, top two, top three, whatever.
And we will talk about the uproar in arm injuries later in the episode, just to preface.
Yes. But I kind of figure going into this year, you know, they're going to have to rely a little more on the offense. And they brought in Rhys Hoskins on a really nice two-year, $30 million deal. We know what he can do. He has 30 home run power when he's healthy. They did promote Jackson Churio and gave him an extension before this season began, before his MLB debut. Christian Yelich had a nice year last year, and so far he's off to a good start. So yeah, the offense has been carrying them. And the pitching is still doing fine, but the Brewers have historically been a good pitching team. So it's not like they're a bad pitching team, but I knew the offense would have to carry, and so far they are.
Yeah. The Brewers have really just picked it up on the offensive side of the ball. And I think that's basically started at the top of their lineup. Yelich is hitting, and we see the Brewers run as Yelich. If Yelich is operating on all cylinders, the Brewers will operate on all cylinders. And I think that this was a pretty big year for them. We mentioned that they traded Corbin Burns. If they had rolled over to start the year, I say at the deadline that they're selling. Now, I'm not sitting here saying that I think that the Brewers are a team that will compete for the World Series, because I genuinely don't see that happening, right? I'm sure they win the Central, given that it's the weakest division in all of baseball, but I don't see them competing for a World Series. However, now they have to readjust and reassess possibly this offseason if they stay hot, if they make the playoffs, if they win the Central by a convincing amount, because I think it's the Brewers Central to lose. I don't think that the Cubs or the Cardinals necessarily pose that big of a threat. Maybe so the Cardinals, but I just can never rely on that team just with the pitching and how scattered it is.
No, I agree with you. I don't believe the Cardinals are even a good team. I don't really know that they're truly that competitive. I personally had the Cubs win the division. But the thing is, like, I struggled to pick this division. Like, probably the day before the season, I made up my mind, okay, Cubs are going to win the division. But I had the Brewers in the playoffs for myself. I posted this on Instagram right before the season started. I had the Brewers in it. So, I mean, totally wouldn't shock me to see them win the division. But, Christian Yelich, he's never going to get back to his MVP form. But
if he can play at a fraction of that, that's
70% of what he used to be.
Yeah. And credit to two guys who have stepped up and filled the shoes. We mentioned Woodruff is out for the year, and they traded Corbin Burns. Freddie Peralta is a stud. All-Star yes. game. He's multiple time All-Star. And this is a guy who I've liked for a long time, primarily because his MLB The Show cards are really, really good. But Freddie Peralta's an absolute stud, and he's stepped up being that true number one this year. 18 innings, 26 punch outs, an ERA of 2.55. And he's been backed by Colin Ray, who's been a very, very pleasant surprise in his age 33 season, a 2.7 ERA and three starts. So two guys that one of which who's been their 2-3 in Freddie Peralta kind of rotating back and forth throughout the years, stepping up and really ascending to that ace role in Colin Ray behind him. And then there are a little bit of question marks. DL Hall is a guy that I really wanted to talk about, because if you look at him on paper, it's not very good. An 0-1, 7.11 ERA, 10 strikeouts in 12 and two-thirds innings. I don't think that accurately reflects his ceiling. Remember, this is a guy who's a couple years removed from a top 15 on MLB's top 100 prospects pipeline, right? This is a good pitcher, a lefty who throws pretty hard with some really good movement. So if they can get him going and they can have a reliable 1-2-3, I think the Brewers can make stuff interesting in the National League to an extent.
Yeah, I mean, I think at best they're the same team that they were last year. And you mentioned how, you know, if they start winning, this is probably a 100-win pace. They're not going to win 100 games. We know that. But like you said, if they continue winning, it changes their plans for both the deadline and the offseason. Honestly, I think I'm not saying they should lose. What I'm saying is, given that they're a team that doesn't spend and they have I think Willy Adames and maybe one other guy on an expiring deal that we know are going to leave. Right. Now, you know they're going to walk unless they take a massive discount, and you're going to get nothing in return for them. So then beyond this year, what do they look like besides the fact that they're kind of a pitching factory? Like you mentioned, Freddie Peralta, D.L. Hall. I mean, look, D.L. Hall, you said his stats aren't good. He got traded for Corbin Burns, so apparently he was good enough for them, right? I mean,
right. And I feel like we've talked about how the Brewers have sort of been a pitching factory, and what we've kind of failed to address. Obviously, we've mentioned Corbin Burns multiple times, but the hole that he leaves there. Now, they trade him to a team that's very good. The Orioles are a very good team. We'll talk about them in a little bit, I'm sure. But by trading Corbin Burns, that sends a message to your team we might be rolling over and starting and blowing this whole thing up. And credit to the guys on the Brewers, because they know. Like, if you trade a Cy Young caliber pitcher a year after playoff contention, like, you know that something is going to happen and it's probably not veering in the right direction. Mm-hmm. So credit to these guys for coming out and literally coming out swinging. William Contreras, big credit to you. You've been absolutely killing it. I had no idea that he possessed this kind of swing out of the catcher position. 4 homers, 15 RBIs, 1.126 OPS and 58 at-bats. I mean, his career, he's an 830 OPS hitter as a catcher. You don't get that anymore at all. So if they really want to strike while the iron's hot, I think there are two ways where they can go about it. They can either continue to blow it up and be like, all right, well, we're performing well. These guys are maybe at their ceiling, so let's try and get rid of them. Or let's try and ride it out and be buyers at the deadline. I don't know who might be available at the deadline, though, Nick.
Yeah, I mean, for some teams, it may be a little too early to identify what their real needs are. I did mention that Devin Williams is going to be out to start the year. I think it's like the first 3 months of the season, so they'll probably need some relief help. But honestly, for me, you said, you know, if they stay in contention, they may buy. They traded Josh Hader like 2 years ago when they were in contention, and that kind of destroyed the whole mood of the clubhouse. I think they still figured it out and squeaked into the playoffs, but I guess you can't really count out the fact that maybe they still make some of these guys available at the deadline. I don't know.
I think it comes down to knowing that the Central is so weak, so they're not focused on winning the Central. I don't think that's what the issue is. I'm not so sure that's the main question. The main question is, how do we get past the Dodgers? How do we get past the Phillies? How do we get past the Braves? Which I personally don't think that they're even remotely good enough to do.
I agree with you, but I mean, I know we weren't doing this at the time. Did we think the Diamondbacks were as good as the Dodgers? Did we think the Phillies 2 years ago were as good as the Braves? Like the thing is for these teams that you mentioned that the goal isn't really essential for the Brewers. It's just about getting in the playoffs and then getting hot at the right time. I agree that they're not as good as the Dodgers, the Braves, and some of these other teams. But
you need to catch fire in October, and that can take you a long way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the Diamondbacks reached the World Series. Do we really think they were that good? No, we don't.
And those colors have started to show a little bit throughout the early goings of the season. So, yeah, I guess I'm with you there. I want to stay in the Central briefly, talk about the Pirates, who have been off to a really good start. Personally, I'm buying nothing in the Pirates. I don't think that this is anything to note. It says on the dock, buy, sell, or trade. I mean, good for them. This is a fan base that has experienced a lot of losing in the recent years. So I'm sure seeing the fruits of their labor in how many losses they've accumulated over the past years finally translate to some early season W's is good for Pirates fans and probably the people in the front office. But I mean, I don't think that they can maintain this good of this hot of pace. I mean, Connor Joe is their best hitter at the moment. So that's, you know.
Well, they did this last year, start the year too. I think through like 3 weeks or a month in the season, they were the best, if not one of the best teams in the National League. And then they cooled off. One thing about the Pirates, I'll say though, we may not think they're a good team. That doesn't mean they don't have some exciting players on that team, because they do. I think they have some young, exciting players that maybe give it
another I'm a big year. Cabrian Hayes guy, by the way. The record, I think Cabrian Hayes is a very good player. And I think that he hasn't really necessarily gotten the shot. Also, O'Neal Cruz, injured last year, phenomenal talent. Like really, really special to watch. This guy's doing things that are never really seen on a baseball field. Hits, can run, really good defense, maybe the best arm in the league, probably the best arm in the league. Like, this team is, like, they're oozing with guys that are right there, right on the brink of, like, really turning that corner and can make it interesting. I mean, Andrew McCutchen's still on that team, so congrats to him. He hit his 300th home run last night. I mean, I don't think that he's that great anymore, but it's nice to see him probably finish his career up in Pittsburgh. And, you know, that's not something you get to see a lot in baseball, is a guy go out where he should go out. So yeah, that's nice to see for what it's worth.
Yeah, it is. But like I said, in a year or two, I think given where that division is, I think they're a threat in that division in a year or two.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's just because the NL Central is so weak, and that speaks volumes to how teams will progress going forward in that division. If they're aware that it may not be that difficult to win, like you said, all you need to do is catch fire going into October. We've seen teams go on some pretty serious runs. They just haven't been able to win those big games. The Diamondbacks and the Phillies should not have been in the World Series the last 2 years. They just simply shouldn't have. They were not good enough to be there, but they caught fire and they got there. And I think that that's what the majority of these central teams, the majority of the teams that aren't those powerhouse teams, the Dodgers, Yankees, Rangers, Astros, Braves, besides those teams, I think all the other semi-competitive and the teams that are on the outside looking in are just looking to catch fire, because at the end of the day, it's 1 month of catching fire and you can, I mean, it changes everything, right?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, the Pirates got fire at the beginning of last year. So, I mean, I don't know. It's just a weird thing where like sometimes a month changes and things just change for a team. It's really weird. I don't get it, but that's just how it happens.
It's baseball. Talking about a pretty drastic change, we'll switch leagues. We'll go over to the Yankees, who have looked really good in the early going. Not a great game today, but apart from that, they've looked really, really good in the early going. And what I've been seeing more and more with this team is one guy can't hit, let's pick him up, right? Judge hasn't really gotten going. Glaber hasn't really gotten going, but there have been other contributing factors. Obviously, Juan Soto has been absolutely phenomenal. Like, speaking as somebody who didn't get the opportunity to watch him that much, because I just honestly don't really care about the San Diego Padres or the Nationals, please watch this guy. Like, even if it's just like tuning in for an at-bat, he's so much fun to watch. The way that he controls the game from the batter's box, it's nothing like I've ever seen before. It's really spectacular. And I'm sure you've seen it the past few years. Like, it's really magical.
I mean, I saw him. What was it? I think what was it, his rookie year or his first full year, where they played the Dodgers in the NLDS, and he hit a home run off of Kershaw, lefty lefty, as like a 20-year-old.
Yeah.
And like from that moment on, I knew that guy was special. But yeah, I got to watch him in the division the last couple of years, and it was so fun to watch. I mean, he's just, he's an incredible player. I mean,
and for
what he's doing at his age, just, I can't wrap my head around it.
Right. He's already in his seventh year in the league, right? And he's still so, so young. He's 25. He's not even 25 and a half. Like, this, he's 7 years in the league now. He's got over 800 career games played. Like, it's so incredible what he's been able to do literally since he broke into the league. Like, first year in the league, 142 OPS plus. Next year in the league, 142 OPS plus, 217 OPS, 175. Career 158 OPS plus, career 947 OPS. Walks like crazy, doesn't strike out a lot, doesn't expand the zone. And I think the most important aspect, he's there every single day. He wants to play. Played all 162 games last year, right, in his career. In 2022, 153 games. Year before that, 151 games. Year before that, 2019, we're not including 2020, 150 games. He's taking the field basically every day. And when your superstar player does that, everybody else wants to play. You don't want to sit down. You don't want to take a game off. And that's not to say that guys are looking for a day off, but maybe they'll bargain a little bit more with Aaron Boone and say, listen, like, I'm trying to play. Like, if you're going to let Juan play, I'm on a heater, or I want some extra bats. I think this is a good matchup. Maybe slot me in the lineup today, even if it's in like the six hole. And I think that has really been evident for the Yankees. So when the bats get rolling, I think this could be like a very, very good team, very dangerous team. And they're doing all of this, by the way, without Gerrit Cole at the helm of the rotation, which is something that we will talk about. As I said, the multitude of pitchers with elbow injuries, I think now is maybe an okay time to segue. We can get back to the not so hot teams later, but it's been a real, like I'm looking right now at our doc, and it takes up half of my screen, the number of pitchers that are on here. Notable guys, too. Like, these aren't nobody. Spencer Strider, Robbie Ray, Walker Buehler, DeGrom, Shane Bieber, Sandy Alcantara, Justin Verlander, Kodai Senga, Framber Valdez, Gerrit Cole, missing significant amounts of time, rehabbing from second Tommy John surgeries. Like, I don't know what it is, Nick. I don't know if it's maybe the pitch clock forcing them to overdo whatever they're doing because they throw so hard. I can't really put my finger on the reason for this massive spike in elbow injuries.
Well, I think when things like this happen, whether it's sports or whether it's the regular news and whatever you do in life, I think everyone is always tempted to take a side and blame one thing, and this one thing is responsible. I don't think it's just one thing. Because, yes, there's been a spike in injuries the last couple of years since the pitch clock has been introduced, but it's not like Tommy John surgery is like this new phenomenon that just happened. Like, there's been other years where there have been bad years that guys have had elbow issues. I think it's a multitude of, one, the pitch clock a little bit, though I don't really buy that theory too much, and I will also say this. I've said this about with expanded playoffs too. I just don't think we have enough information on it right now. We're only a year into the pitch clock era. So I'm going to give it a few more years for that. But I think the biggest culprits of it are two things. I think it's, one, MLB getting rid of substances for pitchers. I'm not saying that I want pitchers to go out there and use pine tar or whatever. Obviously, I don't think we want that. But I think they should be able to use some type of substance.
Something that allows for a better grip. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
And the third thing is, I think it's the shift in MLB over the last decade to velocity and spin rates. I think that actually, to me, would maybe be the biggest issue, because that's just more stress on the arm. I mean, that's it's not rocket science. When you're throwing harder, you're stressing out your shoulder and elbow more. And the human body is not meant to do that.
Exactly. And that's a lot of what guys will talk about with arm care is what you're doing is you're not preventing an injury, but you're rather building up the muscle to try. Well, you are preventing an injury, but you're doing that by building up a muscle, because at the end of the day, your arm is very fragile, and all the ligaments and bones and muscles around it need to be strengthened in order for you to prevent injury. And despite the fact that there's still so many advancements in how you can take care of your arm, it doesn't matter when you're stressing it as much as you are, especially as a young person. Kids are throwing, like, I'm speaking as somebody who is literally not able to throw a baseball anymore because of how much stress has been put on my arm. Kids are throwing year round. Kids are 10, 11 years old, snapping off breaking balls in Little League in bullpens where they should be throwing 40%. They're like, we've never seen anything like this. And it's unless there's something that magically shows up that can cure all this, which it doesn't look like that's happening, there's got to be an adjustment made. And I honestly think that it starts with youth sports, because I agree when it comes to spin rate, and that's what is really the stressor on an arm. I agree. But it all starts from a young age. If you're putting stress on your body from age 7, age 10, even age 12, which is what basically all of these guys are doing, you're bound to get hurt. You're bound to get hurt early. It's not uncommon for guys in high school to have Tommy John before they go to college. That's ridiculous. That no teenager should be having massive elbow surgery before they go to college.
No, I agree with you. I mean, what was it? I think it's two or three of these guys that we listed, they're on their second elbow surgery already. And it's not like those guys are old guys that have been around long. They're still in their 20s. They're still in their prime. And like Spencer Strider, he's already on his second elbow surgery. He had one in college.
He had Tommy John surgery in 2019, and he's having UCL surgery now. Yeah. So
I know this story specifically because Walker Buehler's a Dodger. The Dodgers drafted Walker Buehler years ago knowing he would have to get Tommy John surgery coming out of college. And then as he was becoming the ace of the team, or as he had established himself as the ace or one of the aces, whatever you want to say, he had to get another one. And it's just – it's sad to watch as a fan too, because I've heard this somewhere, and it is so true. When I choose what games I want to watch sometimes – I'm going to look at the pitching matchup.
Yeah, that's the first thing that I look at. It's the first thing that I look at.
Because 100%. I know for a fact that the stars in the lineup are usually going to be in there every day.
Yep. 100%.
Maybe they have a day off. Mm-hmm. But, like, I'm not going to willingly turn on a game with 2 5 starters in it. I want to watch the Garrett Coles. I want to watch the Yuri Perez's of the world, the Spencer Striders, like all of those guys. That's what I want to watch.
I 100% agree. And it's not even us as core baseball fans that want that. The casual fans want that too. When I was talking to a buddy at school today, he was like, oh, I'm going to the Dodger game on Wednesday. I was like, oh, the first thing I asked was who's pitching. That's what you want to know. Because like you said, there are guys, your stars are going to be in the lineup 98% of the time. That's just the fact of the matter. Unless they're injured, which you would know previously, they're going to be in the lineup for the most part. So you want to know who's pitching. And when you've got a laundry list of guys, like I'm literally a laundry list of guys,
all-star stars. I'll put it like that. It's an all-star team.
An all-star assortment of pitchers, stars who are injured for a significant amount of time. Even these guys that are rehabbing their injuries, who have already had their surgeries, dude, they're cooked until at least the all-star, at bare minimum, the all-star break. Guys that like, oh, you know, maybe he'll be out a week. It's just like hurting him a little bit. He's day-to-day. We'll watch him. Nope. Elbow surgery. See ya. See you in 2026, buddy.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, we'll go because Garrett Cole, to me, is the best pitcher in baseball. So we'll just use him as the example.
Yep.
When this happened in spring training, the Yankees said elbow inflammation. He's going to be out to like June 1st. I don't buy that.
I don't even want to think about that. Yeah, I don't want to think about that.
I know you don't, but I'm just saying I don't buy it. I'll use a better example. The Dodgers literally just put Bobby Miller on the IL like 2 days ago with shoulder inflammation.
Bobby Miller.
And they said There's no structural damage. It's fine. He'll start throwing again in a couple of days. No, he's not. He's going to be out at least through the All-Star break. You're not. This is his first full season starting opening day on the roster. He's not going to be back in like 2 weeks. He's just not.
Dave Roberts echoed Bobby Miller's belief he could pick up a baseball in a week. Of course he thinks he can pick up a baseball in a week. No pitcher is like, oh yeah, I'm done now. Like, I'm telling you, when I got hurt, the first thing I said was, it's fine, I just need to ice it. I'll be okay tomorrow. Like, nobody's like, oh yeah, nah. Like, unless your arm is literally hanging out of its socket and you can't throw the ball, like, of course you're gonna say that you can pitch in a week. But realistically, how often does that happen? It doesn't. It's not a thing anymore, especially because I'm telling you, the people that are most aware of all these injuries are the teams. They know how everybody is aware of these guys that are dropping literally like flies. I don't know the statistic, but I guarantee you by the end of the year, we're going to see more pitchers. Like, in terms of how many pitchers collectively pitched in games, we're going to see a greater number than ever before. I don't think we might break it by the All-Star game at this rate, because there are so many guys going down. And the guys that we have that I listed earlier, I listed maybe a third of the list, and the entire list is studs. If you want to go through every single guy who's had an injury, who's a pitcher, this list will be in so long, it's not even funny. Right. And then there's the other side of the coin where teams are signing guys who are currently injured that can't pitch, banking on the fact that, okay, we'll sign you for 2 years. That first year, you're not going to pitch with us, but we're going to build you up. That second year, you're going to be great with us.
Brandon Woodruff,
Chad Green. That's crazy to me. I don't understand how, as a general manager, you can say this guy's coming off of possibly a career altering surgery, and we're still going to put faith in you. Is that becoming that normal? And how concerning is that?
Yeah, it seems to be becoming normal. I mean, I'll just say, the Dodgers have loved doing this. They, JP Fireisen, a few years ago, he was so good with the Tampa Bay Rays. He had like,
oh my God, ERA. I hated, like, JP Fireisen whenever he pitched against the Yanks.
He had a zero ERA through like 20 games in, what was it, the 2021 season, I think. And then he gets a shoulder injury, so he's out for the year and he's out for the next year. But the Dodgers signed him that offseason, give him a 2-year deal. And we're like, okay, we already know you're out for the first year, dude, so don't even worry. You're getting your money. Just rehab. Now he's back this year. He got destroyed last night on ESPN by Mr. Relevant himself,
Jurickson Profar, with a shot to center field.
This dude is throwing 91 mile per hour meatballs down the middle of the plate.
Like, these, what's good with Kevin Gausman? Have you seen that?
What?
Have you seen what's going on with Kevin Gausman?
I heard his velo was way down.
Kevin Gausman was throwing like 89 miles an hour. There's no way that guys aren't, if these are the guys that we know, the guys mentioned earlier, if we know for a fact they're injured, how many other people are injured that just haven't said anything? How many other people are injured that haven't said anything? And how quick and how long is it going to take before they continue to injure themselves further and literally can't pitch again? Because that's what it's going to get to.
I don't know. I don't really have an answer. What I will say is, Tyler Glasnow, who's now with the Dodgers, the former Rays ace, he was on, I forget the name of the podcast, but he was a co-host on the podcast with Chris Rose. Oh. And he was asked about this, and he's like, every pitcher's going to have different opinions. But for Tyler Glasnow, he said, yes, it is worth the risk of pitching this hard and risking the injury. So everyone's going to have different opinions. He says that, I don't know, one happens, your career might be over. I don't know.
Here's what it is that it's become so much more difficult to be dominant without a 97 mile an hour plus fastball.
I agree.
Like, those days of Greg Maddux throwing 89 miles an hour front door, like two seamer coming back cross play, that's not happening anymore. Like, it's just not going to happen anymore. And I'll tell you where it lies, is because nobody is taught this as a kid. Nobody is told to paint corners. It's rear back and throw that as hard as you fucking can. Like, that you can't teach a child that. Because people are most impressionable when they're young, right? Little league coaches, they build a foundation for how somebody is going to play going forward, right? If you tell a 9-year-old kid, rear back and throw it as hard as you can, like, what do you expect to happen 5 years from then when his arm's hanging out of his socket and you don't teach him how to properly stretch or take care of his arm? What happens then? And is it really worth it? I don't think so. I don't think it's worth it at all, because there's more to life than just baseball. And I understand that this is these people's job is to throw baseballs for a living, but there have to be better ways about going about it. And then there's the flip side of, are pitchers now the new running backs, right? If you want to bring football into it, and this is like, I don't think this is a conversation that people are ready to have yet, but we should be talking about it, because how long does a pitcher now have? You're always going to have your outliers, right? Garrett Cole's always going to be an outlier. Like, Scherzer, for the most part, always going to be an outlier. Verlander's always going to be an outlier.
Until now, of course. But
right. You're going to have guys that no matter what are going to contribute despite the injuries. But for the majority of them, what if they just never come back the same? What's the investment look like on a pitcher? Do you start to give the biggest names only like 2 or 3 year deals and give them 30 a year? Is that the smarter thing to do as a team? Because honestly, as a general manager, I'm not looking at a pitcher and saying, okay, I can give you 7 years. I'd be fucking terrified about it.
Yeah.
Especially with the money that pitchers are getting now. Pitchers are getting bags now.
Yamamoto.
To take the mound every 5 days, they're getting bags. And as a general manager, I would be incredibly hesitant to say, okay, it doesn't matter, I'll still give you 7 years.
No, I'm with you. We saw it happen this offseason. I mean, Blake Snell is the reigning NL Cy Young winner, and he had to settle for a 1+1 deal.
Well, I'll tell you what that was. The entire league got together. Every owner and GM got together, and they said, let's intentionally run Scott Boras out of this. Fuck him. Fuck all of his clients. Let's play hard. Let's play hardball.
I don't disagree, but at the same time, I think even just a few years ago, a reigning NL Cy Young winner would get a bag.
Yeah. I mean, still, like, how does that change stuff going forward? Because you had Yamamoto, right, who signed the big deal. I admittedly don't know the starting pitcher market next year. I think Burns is on that market.
Burns is the top. I'll just say this. Corbin Burns and Max Fried are the two top guys.
So what does it look like? What do they get? What does that look like going forward? Because you have Fried, Fried doesn't throw that hard, does he?
No, he actually does, but he's dealt with so many injuries. But I'll say this about Burns. I think it's important. He is a Boras guy.
He is a Boras guy. No, I'm aware of that. He is a Boras guy. And
no, but Fried is usually 95 plus. I mean, rising.
Still, like, what do these guys expect to get versus what they will get? And how do teams start to pivot on how they pay these guys? Because, listen, I don't think it'll be a question that both of those guys get at least 25 plus, but at what length? Right.
Yeah.
I think what the Yankees did with Marcus Stroman, they signed him to a 3-year deal. That's great. Like, I think what you should do with pitchers, because if you sign a guy to a 7-year deal and he gets injured year two and he's never the same, well, then you're fucked and you have a ton of money on the books. Yeah. And that's not fun unless you're like one of five teams that can afford it. We're, as Dodgers and Yankees fans, we're very lucky that our team can afford this.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we have to acknowledge that luxury. Other teams can't do that. It's like that you can't run a franchise like that.
Steven Strasburg in the Nationals.
Exactly. So that's a whole nother conversation. I mean, with Steven Strasburg, that's got to be one of the sadder stories in baseball. He literally gave it all up for a World Series. I mean, talk about a winner. But yeah, no, how does this change the market going forward? I don't know. I don't know how this changes not only the market, but the expectations, because we saw this offseason how the expectations versus reality played out. You talked about Snell. Bellinger also is applicable in this situation. There are guys that we were expecting to get really big deals. Like, JD Martinez only signed a 1-year deal. there's somebody else that I'm missing that was on the market for a good amount of time.
Chapman.
Matt Chapman and Jordan Montgomery were expected to get bigger deals than they really got. And they like, I wanted to stay kind of in the realm of pitchers, is that what is reasonable to expect and what should we expect for a top pitcher in the league like Corbin Burns or Max Fried to get?
I don't know. I mean, given that, I'll say this, given that Corbin Burns is a Boris guy, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that the demands are going to be higher total money than what Yoshinobu Yamamoto got.
I agree. And I think
that's what they're going to ask for, but he's never going to get.
Of course that's what they're going to ask for. Scott Boris is going to walk in there asking for him to have the Buckingham Palace built for him wherever he goes, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he gets it. And every agent knows like their bottom line. They know what a guy realistically should get, but obviously they're going to come in there and try and get the best deal for their guy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think it's a special case with Fried. You mentioned the injuries, right? And if there's a guy who has already had the injuries, what we've seen from a lot of teams is they're more than welcome to accept them because they've already had that injury, but they're going to have another one. Like you need to know that it's basically inevitable that these guys are going to get injured again. So what do you do about that? Do you accept that or do you kind of pivot away from that and go more to your farm? But even if you go into the farm and try and get guys there, odds are they've already had that injury too, or that surgery as well. So where do you go from here? There's not that many places. And unfortunately, there's no real fix, because I'm going to tell you what, if a guy's capable of throwing 100 miles an hour, he's not going to dial it back to 92. It's just not going to happen, because number one, it's not cool. And number two, it's not going to play. 92 doesn't play anymore. It really just doesn't. Can you think of a guy who throws 92 miles an hour that is a real stud?
Probably not. I mean, you'd have to give me a second probably, but probably just be an average player at best.
Yeah, I mean, there's no guy that sits low 90s that is really that good. I mean, even guys that mix speeds, like Yu Darvish mixes speeds, but he can get up there.
Yeah.
Right. It becomes a finesse thing. Now, sure, you can be a non of guy who doesn't throw at a high velocity and still make it in the league, but nobody wants to make it in the league. They want to succeed in the league. They want to excel in the league. They want to be here for a long time. They want to know that they're going to have a job the next year and the year after that and continuing on. Right. So being average is never nobody wants to be average. And nobody's going to say, oh, I can throw 100 miles. If I can throw 100 miles an hour, you best believe I'm going to try and throw 100 every time. Yeah. There's no way I'm going to say, I'll dial it back a little bit, because right now I want to think about longevity. No, I want to throw 100 and get the guy out.
Yeah.
So
I don't know. My fear is that we're going to get to October and there's going to be no aces pitching. It's going to be all 3, 4, 5 guys pitching. And it's going to be really, honestly, sad to watch, I think.
Now, how does that work for MLB kind of as a whole? When the guys that are so heavily, you know who we haven't even talked about this entire time? We haven't even talked about Shohei Ohtani, the fact that he's just not pitching this year either. We just completely failed to acknowledge that.
I forgot to put him on the list, yeah.
Yeah, the biggest name probably in baseball is, like, this is his second surgery too. Like, after the first one, they're like, oh, you know, maybe he won't pitch again. This is his second surgery now in a matter of 4 years. Like, it's just a scary thing, because there might be a lot of validity to what you just said.
Yeah.
Come October, who's really going to get the ball? Who's going to be able to get the ball? And if you give a guy the ball, is he really ready to go? Or is he just trying to push through? And if he pushes through, does he either A, fuck up his career, B, fuck up the season, or C, does both? Because there's no world where the guy's injured, pushes himself, and nothing happens. It's just not – that's not how the human body works anymore.
Yeah, I think the best example of that, actually, last year, the Dodgers threw Clayton Kershaw out there, game one, against the Diamondbacks in the NLDS. He had been dealing with this shoulder issue. They hadn't specified it, but it was a shoulder issue from like the middle of the summer through the end of the season. He found a way to somehow get through it. He wasn't effective, but he still limited the runs.
Right.
And the Dodgers, Dave Roberts going into the playoffs was like, this is the healthiest Kershaw has been. I think he's back. He's going to be fine. He didn't even make it through the first inning because he got tattooed for 6 runs because the dude was throwing 91 miles an hour flat fastballs right down the freaking middle. I mean, what do you think is going to happen?
That's what I'm saying is like, yeah. And these guys know that they're not 100%. But again, they're competitors. So you're never gonna like go and say like, oh, I can't go today, Dave. Like, man, they're competitors. Yeah. They want to win. Kershaw wants to win. Every guy wants to win. They don't want to sit down, especially on the playoffs. Especially in the playoffs, you never want to take a seat, right? But there's got to be something that you can do. And I feel like people listening would think, okay, well, what's the solution? Honestly, I don't know. I really don't. And if I had a solution, if there was a solution, you would think that somebody would have also arrived at the same conclusion as me, right? Somebody with much more credibility, somebody who might have gone to med school. But I don't know what there is to do here except because there's you can't go back, right? There's no way that the next generation is going to be, okay, guys, so we saw how in the flamethrowing era, everybody started to get injured. Oh, nobody wants that. Nobody wants to throw slow. Everybody wants to throw fast. Like that's just the competitor in literally any player. You want to throw harder than the other person. Period. Yeah. End of story. You're always going to give it your all, but at what cost now?
Yeah, it's a tough situation. I mean, I don't know. I think an idea that I've heard out there that's been thrown around, expanding rosters so you can have extra starters, and I don't really know. I don't think that fixes the issue.
But how does that change stuff if everybody's already there? If everybody who's in that if they go to a 7-man rotation, still 6 of the 7 guys have had Tommy John or a major surgery.
Yeah, I do think a 6 or 7-man rotation is in MLB's future for sure. I mean, we're seeing it with some teams, they do it, or like the Dodgers almost have to do it out of necessity now because, you know, the way things work in Japan is everyone pitches once a week. They've got Yamamoto in the rotation, so they can't really just pitch him every 5 days on a Monday and a Sunday or whatever.
But here's the thing is do they build him up to go all 5 days? Is that's a yes or no question. Do they do that?
Do they build him up to go every 5th day? Eventually, you mean?
Yeah.
No. And one of the reasons I think so too, I think that as well, is because next year you're going to add Ohtani to the rotation.
But that's a question mark too. That's something No,
I agree, but I'm saying if you're going to add Ohtani to the rotation, regardless of the injuries, because of all the work he does as a hitter and pitcher, you're not going to veer off from a 6-man rotation.
You know what's interesting? You mentioned how in Japan they go every 7 days. Nobody did that. The Angels didn't do that with Ohtani.
Yeah, you're right.
So is that maybe a thing where like that could have played into it? I don't know. I also don't know what injuries are like over the sea or across the world.
I will say, like, I did read something. I can't cite it because I don't remember. But these issues are not happening in the NPB as much as
they are. That's literally what I'm searching up right now.
And like I mentioned, they do only pitch once a week. So I don't know if that's some kind of like middle ground solution where you just build a 7-man rotation. One guy goes every Monday, one guy goes every Tuesday, and so on. That's my best guess because we don't – when guys are coming over from the NPB to MLB, we don't really hear about them having injury concerns. They pitch so much. Like Yamamoto, for example, he was obviously highly sought after. The Dodgers, the Yankees, and the Mets were in the running at the end, and they were all willing to give him 10 to 12 year deals, $300 million plus, never pitched a game in the big leagues. And there were no injury concerns that anyone brought up.
Yeah. Okay. From everything that I'm looking at there, the majority of guys that have pitched in MLB that have came from Japan have been pretty injury, I guess, not injury plagued. Yu Darvish. Yeah, injury-free. Yu Darvish, never really a big injury. Daisei Matsusaka, never really a big injury. Tanaka, never really a big injury. Hidonomo, never really a big injury. Like there's a laundry list of guys that just don't seem to get injured because for them, this is, and by the way, for those 7 days in between where you're pitching every seventh day, that's happening when there are children too.
Yeah.
Right. And they stick to that because in Little League, you might pitch twice in 2 days.
Yeah.
I've experienced it firsthand. Like, oh, you have multiple games today? Okay, Michael, we're going to start you first game. We'll have you pitch 5 innings and you'll come close game two. Like, and at the end of the day, you walk home and you get in the car and you've thrown 90 pitches. Like, no 13-year-old should do that. I was doing that at 13 years old. It shouldn't happen. And that's the norm here. And it's different overseas, and you would expect that. Like with the amount of intelligence in baseball behind the scenes, you would expect, oh, overseas something there, it's not as prevalent. So let's see what they're doing, and maybe we can adapt that.
Yeah, I'll say this. My one kind of guess as to what could be the difference. I don't know exactly how different it is, but I have heard that the baseballs in the NPB and KBO are different from MLB.
Yes.
So I'm wondering if that's what it is. That may be my only guess. What we do know is MLB changes the baseballs a lot.
They do.
And that is really bad for the pitchers. And so I don't know if that's part of it.
What they did do this year is I know they've changed the mud that they mud the ball with. And that was something that Chris Bassitt talked about earlier in the year. That's noticeable. These guys, pitchers, this is the definition of creature of habit. Like these guys have most of these guys, same exact routine almost every day, and especially on start day. So when their job is literally to throw a 5-ounce spear over the plate and you change the configuration of that 5-ounce spear, of course it's going to send them for a loop, right? Like,
yeah.
And does that factor into injuries? I don't know. I'm not a doctor, but consistency will always prove superior to, in the sense of, oh, if you're going to change stuff this often, you might as well. Like, there's clearly things that are factoring into injuries, or would appear to factor into injuries, that it seems like an easy fix for MLB. Don't change the balls, bro. Like, just don't. It's not that difficult.
Yeah, it's funny too, because like when we're watching games, you could totally tell when the balls are juiced.
Yeah, 100%.
Totally. It's like so easy. I swear to God. There was the Dodgers played the Padres on Friday. 8 home runs between the two teams. The balls were juiced. I know it.
And as a fan, you can like if you watch enough ball, you know. And you can tell pretty easily, like from the beginnings, that like, okay, these things are kind of flying and it's not the wind. Like there's something up.
Yeah. Right? I expect it on national TV games. Mm-hmm. Juice balls.
Yep.
I expect it in the playoffs. Mm. I expect it in the All-Star game. I know it's an All-Star game, but pitchers are still pitching.
So.
And then I just kind of expect it every so often. And it, like I said, it's very noticeable when it happens. What was it? 2019 was the year where we really had the juice ball.
Yeah, thing. Yeah. 2019 was the big year. And here's where I think it comes into play is if there are juiced baseballs, right, how many times a game do you get a mix of both? And you have pitchers throwing with basically completely different baseballs, right? That's the issue. If that's actually happening, and again, we're just speculating here. If that's what's going on, that's the issue. And that's a really big issue and a pretty easy fix in retrospect.
No, it obviously, yeah. I don't know why. If that is the case, who the hell ever decided to do that? One other thing I'll mention too, going back to what I said about sticky stuff or substance earlier, is while I certainly agree there should be some stuff banned and then there should be some stuff allowed, I think one of the big mistakes MLB made when they cracked down on it a couple years ago, they changed it in the middle of the season. I think pitchers needed a whole offseason to get used to it. And actually, I'm sure you heard this. Tyler Glasnow once spoke about this, how because they changed it in season – every guy had to adjust in the middle of the season where basically they had to put the ball deeper in their grip and hold it tighter, which is obviously putting so much more tension in the elbow.
Exactly.
They didn't have an off season to adjust. They just had to do it in the middle of the year.
And speaking to going back to what was said earlier about literally like to prevent injury, you have to strengthen the support around, right? Around whatever it is, your arm, your leg, regardless of the situation. If you instantly one day wake up and you have to put more stress on something like night and day in this sense, you don't have time to build your body up. And that's what you're talking about more when you're talking about, oh, if you do it in the offseason. There's no time for pitchers to build their body up. Of course they're going to get hurt. They're fragile as it is. That's number one. Number two, if you're not giving them an adequate amount of time, and also they're not being told that the baseball is changing. Like opening day, Chris Bassett went back and was like, it was a clear difference, but we had no idea.
Yeah.
No clue. Like, it can't happen. And here's the other thing, and I know this for a fact, is that balls used in spring training have already been made. Like, more times than not, they're recycled balls from the year before. Sometimes you have spring balls, sometimes, but there's a wide assortment. Like, if you go to batting practice or if you go to a game and you dump out all the balls that are used, probably half of them will be new and half of them will be old. So there's no consistency there either, right? That's another problem that we were talking about earlier. It's a wide variety of problems that MLB, like, they need to address because it's not getting any better. And there are fixes for it, seemingly, that continue to go unrecognized and unnoticed. And at what point do pitchers start to say, listen, like, bro, we're all fucking getting hurt. Like, what do we do about this?
One thing I fear from MLB side, because Rob Manfred has talked about this, is bringing back the importance of starters by further limiting the number of pitchers you can have on a roster, which I think is like the worst idea possible. Because look, I think every baseball fan would love to see pitchers go deeper into games, go 7 innings, 8 innings, whatever, like what Gerrit Cole did last year, or what Sandy Alcantara did the year before.
Yeah.
But that's not fixing any sort of issue. Like, he also talked about, oh, we can't have these bullpen games or whatever. Look, I don't like bullpen games that much, but they're necessary in a way, I think. Like,
well, here's what it comes down to is if you're going to have a bullpen game, normally it's just because a guy isn't there isn't a guy there to pick up that extra spot, right? Maybe somebody got injured. Maybe that fifth starter is going back and forth between the minor leagues and you don't really have a guy. But when you give a team an opportunity for a bullpen day, what it does is it resets the pitchers. It gives them a day to just kind of relax and do whatever the hell they're going to do. And normally that would translate to either more time to take care of your arm, a day to get off your feet, which is super beneficial, or something of that nature that will help preserve their arm care moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, actually, the Dodgers, through the early part of the season, have employed their strategy because they're waiting for some other guys to come back from rehab. Or like I said, because Yamamoto can only pitch once a week, their sixth starter right now is technically a bullpen game until Walker Buehler comes back. So that's how they're doing. Every team does it a little differently. I know I can't speak on what the Yankees do or whatever, but
they occasionally run bullpen games too. And here's what I've seen when teams run bullpen games. They're less likely for guys to get hurt because more people are pitching. And if more people pitch, that means the opportunity for somebody to get injured is less likely. For one, like if you have one guy throw 8 innings, he is way more of a chance to get injured than if you have him throw 2 innings and then another guy comes in and throws 2 innings. And that maybe would touch on what you were talking about earlier with expanded rosters. I don't know if that's a thing. Maybe obviously you can't make it mandatory to have a bullpen game, but maybe a minimum amount of pitchers. I don't know what it is. It's definitely a difficult situation because if Manfred goes, oh, well, you need to have a minimum of 4 pitchers each game. That's a problem. You can't do that. It's not going to work. That like the outrage would be fucking ballistic. Imagine if he said that. But there are so many different moving components that it makes it difficult to find a solution. But there's been no acknowledgement of it either. That's my biggest issue. There's been no acknowledgement of what's going on from anybody in MLB, like anybody of any type of power. And I'm not talking about general managers or players or analysts. Yeah. I'm talking about like the guys that call the shots. They've been silent. There's no acknowledgement about it at all.
Yeah, I think that frustration that you're feeling, that I'm feeling too, I think the people you're referring to is mostly Rob Manfred, the commissioner of baseball, and Tony Clark, the players union president.
Right. Those, you have to argue, right? And I get that the union is strong. Trust me, I'm aware of that. And I would agree that everybody in the union is very much aware of what's going on. There needs to be something that is said. There has to be public acknowledgement of what is going on now, because it's not good. It's so obvious that there's stuff going on behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. And for Manfred or whoever it is in a position of power to sit on their hands, it's a really, really bad look for baseball.
It is. I don't know. I don't really – you say you're questioning them. I don't trust leadership in MLB, like either of these sides. Like you mentioned it's a strong union and whatever, and they're all kind of in unison. They say the same thing, whatever. Like, I'm more on the players' side, the players' union, but, like, come on. Let's figure out the solution,
I guess Tony Clark did address it. He blamed the pitch clocks. Despite unanimous player opposition and significant concerns regarding health and safety, the commissioner's office reduced the length of the pitch clock last December, just one season removed from imposing the most significant rule change in decades, union executive director Tony Clark said Saturday night in a statement. Since then, our concerns about the health impacts of reduced recovery time have only intensified, Clark said. The league's unwillingness thus far to acknowledge or study the effects of these profound changes is an unprecedented threat to our game and its most valuable asset, the players.
Yeah.
Okay, so he is acknowledging it. So where's the response? Where is it? I don't see it. It needs to happen. Like now.
Maybe you could search it up, or I could too. I think MLB did say something where it's just like, no, the players' union is wrong or whatever. Like, I think the problem with both sides right now is instead of trying to come together and figure out a solution and figure out what the core issue is and why it's happening, they're just focused on blaming one thing or the other, which is never going to get us anywhere. Like I said when we started this conversation, I don't think it's just one thing that's causing this. I think it's a multitude of things. And
MLB offices have failed to comment on Clark's statement.
Okay, my bad. I stand corrected. But either way, I think even from the player side, players union, Tony Clark's statement, I don't think we're getting anywhere by just
You can't blame.
Blaming one thing and being like, that's it.
But there's definitely some contingency around between those two sides, right? So but it can't be as you can't be Manfred and say, okay, we're going to spite the Players Association and just not address this, whatever. Because if the guys that bring the money to the game aren't on the field, there's nothing to discuss because you're not going to have a job pretty soon. Yeah. It's not rocket science, right? So if you fail to comment on something, and credit to Tony Clark, maybe it's not the most effective way of going about it, but we mentioned how strong the players' union is. They're locked in, right? So if you're going to go out on record and make a statement basically saying, okay, it's the pitch clock's fault, you can't just sit there as the owners and sit on your hands. And the fact that if they respond, it's going to likely be in response to something that Tony Clark said is problematic in and of itself, because you should have been addressed it in the first place. You shouldn't have had to literally get edged to say something.
Yeah, it's I don't know. I don't know when this is going to be fixed. What I do know is I think we have like 2 or 3 more years on this current CBA, so I'm not sure that anything can happen until then.
Oh man, think about what's going to happen when the new CBA is up for bargaining. Holy shit. Oh, it's going to be a complete disaster. That's going to be awful. I can't wait to watch how that unfolds.
I mean, we were like that close to losing games a couple years ago.
We will lose games soon. Oh, we're going to lose a multitude of games. Yeah, it's not going to be fun. That's going to do it for us today. I'm Micah Fleischman.
And I'm Nicholas Bear.
Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode of The Baseball Plug. Peace.